Carl Kennedy from The Lodge, and you're listening to Scott Thompson, Focus on Metal. Focus on Metal!
Hey, metalheads, Scott
and Richie,
welcome you to yet another episode of Focus on Metal. How are we doing, man?
Doing great.
Doing good?
Yeah, just looking at this thing you're holding in your hand.
Well, you know, a few weeks ago, you brought up and you talked about, we were talking about Slayer and the cost of that edition and stuff. And I realized that we've skirted around a little bit about merch and all that, but we never really talked about some of these like box set things that you look at and go, wow, that thing is incredible and all that. And I think you made a good point about a lot of the Slayer stuff on there about like, wow, 150 pounds. That's kind of rich. As far as for you, I mean, like, what's the most outlandish box set that you've bought?
Okay. I don't have many. I have the Kiss one, not the expensive one.
Not the full guitar case one.
I have Pandora's Box Aerosmith.
Yeah.
I have Nine Lives Robert Plant, which is fantastic. I have the Alice in Chains one. I have, the one that I got over time was the remastered Judas Priest with all the studio records.
When
they released the second set of 3 CDs, you could buy them in the box that housed the whole 12.
Yeah.
So I've got that.
Nice.
I don't have many. I don't think I've got any other box sets.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not really a massive box set guy. I'm not like the thing you're holding there.
So yeah. So I it's interesting. You know, like things that come out when they're limited, and like you said, you're not like this particular box set that I'm holding. It was never in a store. It was a case of you took a chance on getting it when it was offered. You know, and I don't even remember how many of these that they made.
It's heavy.
So what I'm referring to is it's a few years back, AC/DC, they put out a box set that looks like a little stack. And the cover lifts off, and the cover is actually a working guitar amplifier. It does not sound incredible by any means, but it's just a cool little touch they put in. So as you delve through, what do you got in there?
Right. Well, there's a hardback book.
Which is a great book. Pictures you've probably never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Really well done.
Yeah.
Through their whole history.
Yeah.
You know, just amazing stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, it's big, it's glossy, it's nice stuff.
That looks like vinyl.
So, yeah, you got a whole bunch of vinyl.
That's,
Those are all the CDs.
Okay. This is the bonfire thing, isn't it?
No.
It's not?
No, it's not.
Okay.
Nope.
What's this? Vinyl. Cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's... I don't think that second one's vinyl.
All right, let's have a look then.
Is it? Maybe it is. I don't think it is, though.
Posters and...
I actually haven't been in this thing for a while.
It's so it's 8 all by pictures, 10 right? Photographs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So how much did this cost and how much did you tell your wife it cost?
No, that was $150.
And 80 to ship. It's heavy.
It actually came all disassembled. So I had to actually, so each piece was in its own little separate box in this giant ass box. It was like, what the hell is this? And then it was like, oh, okay. So I just got to fit it all together. But I mean, it's a great set, and, you know, a lot of material on there. And yeah, it's probably one of the coolest box sets I ever picked up.
That to me is cool because, it's pretty, it just looks good. It's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah.
It covers an era rather than a record.
Yeah.
Which is where I have you have the Sabbath 13. You got the deluxe.
I did.
Thing. I just bought the CD with a couple of bonus tracks.
Right.
Now, what came with 13? There was, DVD?
There was some lyrics. I think it was the extra making of DVD. There was some pictures. I think the vinyl's in there. Yeah, the vinyl's in there.
Vinyl's in there. Yeah. So I think some of them are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Want to be something else now for me to fork out $150 for... what other box sets do you have? I know you've got a Sound of Thunder. You've shown me that one.
Oh, that's a fantastic one.
Scott's going into his TARDIS room here. It's three times bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
This is probably the second coolest box set that I got.
You had Eddie's head. Is this Eddie? No.
Opens the other way. Hinges up like a cigar box.
I was looking for this for years. This is the one.
This they had in, of course, back when I bought it, you could find a lot of these things in stores, and Newbury Comics had it.
Yeah, this is the, what's the name on it? Beast, oh, what's it called?
I don't remember what it's called anymore.
Oh, either do I. It's got, I do remember when it came out, it had, this is the one with the Donington show on the CD. It has all the B-sides.
Yeah.
It's got a shot glass and a scroll with the family tree.
You got
the band.
It. Yeah.
This is expensive now if you want. It's still out there, but you pay for it.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's in this. It's in a really nice embossed tin box as well, which is really cool.
Yeah, I actually had this in my hand years ago.
Yeah.
And I put it down, and this is one of the things that I should have bought, and I didn't, so I'm just going to knock Scott out now and run
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's probably my second favorite box set that I've got. Obviously, I've got like the Binge and Purge, Metallica.
And we talk about this. It's Maiden.
Yeah.
Maiden when they do stuff like
they
this.
They do it right.
It's the dog's
bollocks. Yeah.
So,
and yeah,
fantastic.
It's good stuff. Yeah.
I have got the Binge and Purge thing as well. But do you have the old Binge and Purge one? Or do you have got the VHS? You have the actual box?
Yeah.
Oh, with the VHS? All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I only got the CD one that was re-released years later.
I got that. And obviously, I got the first run of Pandora's box as well, which is great.
That's the big box?
Yeah.
That's
the
one
box.
I got.
Yeah.
That's the one I got.
Yeah.
The things look great. When the box sets are done right, they look fantastic.
Yeah.
It all depends on the content for me, though. The one I think that's not very good, and it had a ton of potential to it, was Ozzy's Prince of Darkness.
Yeah.
One of the CDs is cover versions. I'm like, really? Ozzy doing cover versions? I borrowed it off a friend of mine, and even the unreleased tracks on it are known tracks, more or less, with different folk, different words in them. So you actually know the song. They just change the name on the chorus or something.
That's crap.
But you don't know that until you buy it.
Right.
And I just thought that was a huge opportunity lost, because Ozzy has a career, a solo career, since 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is coming out with stuff like this and you know, covers with Miss Piggy and all this fucking shite.
Yeah.
And let's talk about bands out there that maybe haven't done a box set. Is there any band out there that you'd say, fuck, I'd love if they did a decent box set? Saxon? Have they got a good one? Have they got one? What about Dio?
There is, what is there?
There's a singles one.
Yeah. That looks pretty good. It would be cool if Saxon got one. I think what they've done with Saxon, though, is Saxon's done really well with putting out some of those other things, like when they did the Heavy Metal Thunder one, and they put in some rarity stuff and things. So it's almost like the things you'd get in a box set that would make you want to do it, they've just put it out separately as a piece. So it's, they'd have to do something that was cool and packaging and stuff, and maybe some other kind of bonus merch in there, I think, to get people to be interested.
I'd love to have, and it's probably, you're never probably going to get it, is I think there's a decent Kiss one there for the non-makeup era, because with the box set they put out with the CD that's actually from that era, there's like a demo called Time Traveler that Paul Stanley did, and there's not much else, and they were one of the bands, like they recorded tons of songs, and I don't think most of them have ever seen the light. I think Sword and Stone was one, and I think that's been released. But they would have recorded extra songs for the albums, and they were never released. And I think because they're back in the makeup now, they were really heavy on, like you've got the Love Gun one, and there's been the Destroyer one, and I think that era they're just not going to go back to. But like, I think Tesla have been talking about bringing one out for years. That they've got tons of extra stuff that never came out.
I don't know if that got delayed with the, was it a fire or something?
Yeah, the studio got burned down. Yeah.
But I know they were really playing up about wanting to do that, and it sounded really promising.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of these bands that have you know, they've come out over the years saying that they have a ton of extra stuff that never saw the light of day. Now, in this is my opinion, right? In my opinion, I think the Scorpions missed the boat a little bit with the new record, because they could have probably brought out a box set with all the extra stuff they've done, and they just put out half an album with re-recorded tracks. They're bound to have a ton more stuff that they've done over the years.
Maybe
that's coming in a couple of years' time. I don't know, but you just look at some bands, like I'd say Queensryche probably have a decent box set in them. Then again, there's certain bands and you think, oh, maybe the stuff wasn't released because it was shit. You know, you just don't know. The other one I have, and it's actually cool now, I don't listen to it very much and I'll probably ruin my cred on the show, but I've got the Bon Jovi one.
Uh-huh.
I think, what was it, 100 million people can't be wrong or something like that. And it's nearly every track has been unreleased on it.
Wow.
Now that's cool, like that, you know, and some of the tracks are unreleased for a reason, but some of the songs on it are really good.
Yeah.
And they're a lot better than the stuff they're bringing out these days. But I think that was a cool idea, that they could have gone and they could have done, right, we'll do the greatest hits and then we'll have a live CD on and everything. And they actually went into the vaults and, they, you know, a lot of the tracks are explained, the story behind them, why they weren't released, why they're coming out now. And they tried to put them in a certain running order on the CDs, so they're not ballad heavy here and rock heavy here. Like it's a lot of music, and a lot of it I won't listen to again for a while, but it's got some cool stuff. And the other ones, of course, we talked to Jimmy DeGrasso, the two Y&T Unearthed stuff. Yeah. There's some fantastic stuff on that too.
Yeah,
so certain bands have it, have the stuff there.
Yeah.
It's the, of course, it's who owns the recordings.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a problem, like to have a really killer, like, Priest box set. I mean, Priest could put something out as killer as Maiden. You know what I mean? They've got the imagery and all that stuff, and I'm sure they could do it. But again, it's like, well, who owns what, where? And
yeah, but the problem with Priest, and I remember over the years, they were always asked, was there anything extra?
Yeah.
And they always said no. And then they brought out all these things with extra studio tracks on it. And I'm thinking, everyone knew they had all these bands record more than they normally do, because they had bigger budgets and, you know, they'd record 12 songs, 10 might make the record. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people would be they'd want to hear the stuff saying, wow, that album was fantastic, Screaming for Vengeance, you know. But some of the tracks, when they actually get them, you only ever listen to the album the first eight, and you never listen to track 9, the new one, because it ruins the listening experience for you a little bit. I'm kind of on the fence about box sets. Some of them are very expensive, though. They really want to have quality product in it. The material would have to really justify the price for me as well.
Right, yeah.
The AC/DC one, that looks fantastic.
But
the Sabbath 13 one, am I buying it for the CD and the vinyl's got the same as the CD? And I don't know about that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be some out there that you look at. And again, it's kind of up to your level of fan too. But you kind of look and go, it doesn't really have enough for me to move the bar. But I mean, pretty much the ones that I bought, I've been really happy with. It's been, you know, like that Maiden one. It's like, this is just like freaking cool.
Just the whole thing.
You know, before you even open it, you're like, you're just like running your hands over all that's embossed. It's like, wow, this thing is just the balls.
Yeah,
you
put that on a coffee table and a stranger would walk into your house and say, oh, what's that? And they'd open it and have a look at it. Wow, that's cool. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
How much did that cost you?
Oh, I don't remember, because I bought that like the year it came out. So I think I've had it for
a
while.
15 years old.
Probably easily.
More than that, yeah. Yeah. And now you're buying all the singles.
Yeah.
So they're getting you again.
They are.
Yeah, Steve Harris needs the money. He's gone on a club tour this year.
That's right. British Lion going out. Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I mightn't like the record, but he's actually going out and playing club shows. And I admire him tremendously for doing that. I really do.
Yeah. And I think the thing too is for that, you know, these are people he's played with for a long time. And, you know, they're like, they're friends. So he's going out with his friends.
Yeah.
You know, and of course that's the, it's kind of the perfect thing, you know, to do.
Yeah, yeah. And I know Maiden are on, well, the album's done.
Yeah.
And they're just waiting for Bruce to get healthy again. I can't wait to hear the new Maiden record.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear it. Yeah,
should be good. All right, so let's close up discussion shop for a little bit, and let's run a little bit of... Track of the Week this week is from the band Black Welder, from their brand new one and their first one called Survival of the Fittest. I'm not really sure if we can really call it fully their first one. This whole band kind of originates out of another band that you may or may not have heard of, and that is called Seven Seraphims. And the main guy who put that together, Andrew Sooks, he put this whole new project together. It was going a little bit darker, a little bit heavier. And he decided, since that was how it was going, he'd put a whole new band name on it. And hence we get Black Welder. And who's we got in Black Welder? Well, obviously, Andrew Sooks plays guitar. We got Bjorn Englund, of course, plays bass for Dio Disciples. And he played bass for Yngwie Malmsteen. And then also we have Aquilus Priester, who did drums in Primal Fear and Hanger, and also he was in Angra. And of course, the vocals, which is one reason why I like this band so much, is from Ralph Sheepers, who of course is from Primal Fear, and if we want to cross the T's and dot the I's, X of Gamma Ray. So as I said, we've got a new one out, and that's been out now for a couple months. It's called Survival of the Fittest. It's on Golden Core ZYX Music. Great stuff, you know, 10 tracks of just really good, solid stuff, and I can't say enough about it. So I think the best thing to do is, like Joe Perry would say, let the music do the talking. Hopefully you're going to dig the track, and if you do, make sure you go out and buy Survival of the Fittest. And if you want to find out about the band, what's going on with them, you can find out about them at facebook.com/blackwelder metal. And so our track of the week this week from Black Welder off of Survival of the Fittest is With Flying Colors. There you go. Track of the week, Black Welder. Like I said, great stuff there. Make sure you go out and get that album. And as I said, you want to find out more about Black Welder, go to facebook.com/blackweldermetal. All right, let's move on to our guest of the week. Really great guest this week as you heard at the beginning of the show, Carl Kennedy from The Rods. And of course, last year, just the end of the year, Carl also released his first solo album called Headbanger. Absolutely great album, really shows off what Carl can do. And of course, you know, he's been playing with The Rods since around like 1981. They put their first album out and just been really great at releases. Great band, you know, great, like I talked to Carl about in joke, East Coast metal. And he's done a lot of other stuff too. He's done some production work. I mean, his production work list is pretty kick ass. You know, he'd work with Jack Starr, did the Out of the Darkness album. He was doing Anthrax. He produced Fistful of Metal, Armed and Dangerous. And he worked with Exciter on Violence and Force, Hellstar on Burning Star, Overkill. He did Possessed. And also he produced the original Thrasher Metal All-Star project, which has people in there like Dan Beeler and James Rivera and Dan Spitz and Billy Sheehan, all kinds of guys. So he's been doing a ton of production work as well as kicking the skins for the Rods. And just like I said, just storied past from this guy. Just done a ton of stuff. So, as I said, 2014, he put out his first solo album. It's called Headbanger. I think that was definitely appropriate. And he put in some great guests he has on there. Chris Caffrey from Savatage and TSO. Has a Mark Tenio from Accept. And he has Joe Como from Liege Lord. Then also John Hahn, who did like the bulk of the guitars playing on here as well. He's on here. Just a lot of great guests. And a great, great album. And of course, the one ultra special guest he has on the album is, of course, the one and only Ronnie James Dio. So what do you say we kick back and play a bit of the Rods and then dig into the mind of the headbanger himself, Carl Kennedy from the Rods. Guys, I am super psyched. I have on the line with me today the amazing headbanger, the drummer himself, Carl Kennedy. How are we doing, Carl?
Doing great, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And obviously, you know, you guys have got a lot of stuff going on. You know, you had the solo album that came out in 2014, and you've been doing a lot of stuff still with the Rods. And of course, you know, most recently, near and dear to my heart is that you guys cut a brand new single with the V. I was very excited about that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And, you know, it was an interesting thing because Gary was friends with Veronica, had been friends with her. And then he suggested her new album's coming out and said, you know, we talked about a Ronnie tribute, you know, Ronnie Dio tribute, and, you know, it just came about. It seemed like a great idea. She came up and did a show in Auburn as a warm-up date for the European dates, and just thought, you know, this is great. We've got to memorialize this somehow. So we ran into the studio, and we cut Smoke on the Horizon, and we knocked it out fast, but she did a great job, and, you know, we're thrilled about it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, she's got just an incredible voice, and she's an awesome person, too. She's, you know, one of the guests that I've had on a couple of times, and I love having her on because she, like, relentlessly give me crap. And it's great, you know, just to kind of, I mean, you know how she is, and she's just very boisterous and everything, and just a great person.
Absolutely. You know, and we're just talking. I said we were just having a band conference about this upcoming show with Queensryche. And, you know, one of the things I said was, you know, as time went on, the more we were with her in Europe, from my standpoint, I feel like I have a good friend now in Veronica. And I just came to appreciate her talent, you know, each night because she'd come on stage and just kill it every time.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
You know, as an artist, you know, I just, my respect for her grew and grew as well. It's just getting to hang with her and becoming more of a friend.
Yeah, just absolutely incredible voice. And she's kind of a, you know, part of this small group of folks that of just female vocalists that are still kind of really under the radar. And we'd love to get them up more and let more people know about them. And she's just right up there in the top of the heap of just what she can do. So, you know, it was great to see her with you guys. And I just thought, wow, that's a great combination.
Well, and hopefully Now or Never will do well for her because I've heard the album. It's very good.
So. Awesome. I'm jealous now that you've heard it already. So I can't wait to hear it myself.
I'm sure you'll be getting one of the advanced copies. It's really good. And I think it's, you know, like she says in her little video promo that it's not, you know, it's different from the Benedictine stuff. And it is. And it kind of, I don't know, it's really refreshing. It's a great album.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it because, you know, there's a lot that woman can do with her voice. And so, you know, I know that there's got other facets in there. We've talked a little bit about some of the things that she's, you know, has kind of in her musical background and stuff. So I'm sure some of that's going to come out on this album and I'm going to be very happy to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So of course, you know, speaking of solo albums, you know, in 2014, you put out Headbanger. It slipped behind the radar, I think, of a lot of folks, but just a killer album from you. And, you know, besides your performances on there, you had some really great guests that did this album with you as well.
Absolutely. You know, I was fortunate that, you know, I reached out to some friends and they really jumped in for me. And John Hahn was the first guy, and I had performed on John's first album, you know, and John's first solo album. And John was, you know, just great. I mean, he came in and knocked it out and very respectful of my guitar parts and my ideas, at the same time bringing his incredible talent. So it just worked out, and Chris Caffrey and John trade solos on a couple of songs, and that's like phenomenal as well. Chris Caffrey, when I got his solos, I just said, you know, Chris, this is unbelievable. I called him and just said, like, just, I was blown away by the first solo he sent. And so, I mean, it just, Joe Camel sang great, Mark Tremillo sang his ass off. There's just so many great people on the CD.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great you have Chris on there too, because, yeah, I mean, he does some great solos, but he's also got sometimes really different takes on solos as well that really will pop out of a song. So it was cool to see Chris on here.
Yeah, very. And, you know, really, again, just great that he jumped in and, you know, did it for me.
Yeah. Now, I mean, as far as the actual, you know, making of the album and stuff, I'm assuming that you actually produced all this yourself?
I did. I mean, I had most of the, I mean, I used to have a professional studio. Now I have a home studio. But I did all the drums here. Mark sang his vocals here. We did a lot of bass tracks here. We did, you know, John did his guitar tracks in his home studio. Excuse me. So it was actually an interesting kind of a hodgepodge of using technology. We did it real time, and we also used the technology to file share. So it was quite, you know, it was amazing to do a project that way. And I actually added my drum tracks for the most part. After John, I would send John my arrangement, and then John would, with a click track, and then John would send me his guitar parts with my arrangement, and then I would, with him playing it incredibly well, and then I would add my drums to that. So it was really interesting, but I tried to maintain a live feel because, you know, you have a tendency to, when you're using in the digital age, to just go back and beat it to death and try to, you know, you can beat doctor things, you know, and beat doctoring is great if you're doing a dance track or something, but, you know, when you're trying to play something that's, and you hear it, I mean, a lot of metal albums do not have real drums on them.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it's just programmed. And, you know, it certainly makes a cleaner, more powerful record in some ways. But for me, I wanted it. I left things in that at first I was like, oh, maybe I should redo that. And I thought, you know what? It just keep it real. Just knock it out and play it with a feel. And if it's not perfect, that's cool because that's, you know, part of what it is. So there was the, you know, the age-old fight of do you go for that live feel or do you try to let the technology smooth things out? And I didn't. For the most part, all my takes are one take, you know, that I just eventually found a track after going through it one time that I liked. And I just kept it, even if there were spots in it where I thought maybe I would have redone this or maybe I should have played my kick drum a little harder in that section. I just said, you know, screw it. I'm going to just leave this. And, you know, in the end now, I'm actually happy I did that because there were certain things that John did and certain things that we played. And I just left those little things in, warts and all. You know, I thought it added character. And I thought, you know, it doesn't always have to be sanitized and sterilized for it to be good.
Yeah. And I would imagine, too, that, you know, when you hear, you've kind of got the, you know, the vision in your head of how the arrangement goes. But then you hear John's tracks and, as a drummer, you go, oh, you know what? Maybe I should just put a little bit of, you know, a little brass accent on there that I wasn't thinking of before. And it all adds to that live feel of, you know, it really sounds like you're playing off of each other. Yeah.
Playing off that. That's right. And that's why I wound up doing my tracks after rather than giving him tracks and, you know, let him kind of go for it. And then I would come back to it. But it was also an interesting thing. But I probably produced 35 plus albums and demos. And this was the first time, and some people had asked me, some of my friends said, why now? Why would you do a solo album now after all these years and all these albums you produced and recorded, you know, with the rods and different things? Why now? And it was an interesting question, but aside from why now, it was, the experience was interesting for me in that when I produce other bands or when I work with the rods and we produce ourselves, you have people who say, you know, try it this way. Or, yeah, that's cool, but that's not cool. Or, you know, let's do a different take. Let's change the tempo. You know, you get input and you get feedback. And with this, I was the only one who had the vision and I was the only one who knew where the pieces were coming in and what they sounded like. And so at the end of the project, I really had a lot of self-doubt about whether or not it was good. Nobody heard it. I was the only one. And, you know, you're kind of looking for someone to give you some input, and there was no one. I had to make the decisions, and I have to say that it was uncharted territory for me, and I was a little insecure. I mean, it just was tough in that regard. And it surprised me because I've done, as I said, a lot of albums. Not my first time at the rodeo for making an album.
Right.
I know how the process works. But it also caught me by surprise that I was, you know, wow, is this going to be good? And so at the end of the day, I put it together and said, okay, I guess I can let it go. But it was a couple moments there. even on My Life, My Way, which was a very a personal and important song for me, I just couldn't get the track. And I literally tried it for about a week and a half. Every day I would try to play it. It just didn't like the feel. And I was telling Rob Reiner, we were talking on the phone, and I was just saying, you know, just not coming together. And he gave me the pep talk, you know, the way I would for an artist as a producer, you know, but just going for it and not you're overthinking it. You just got to go play, you know, from the heart. And he gave me the rap, and so I did. I went up and played it, and I knocked it out. You know, it was one take, and it was, that's it. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
That was done. You know, I didn't stop thinking about it, because that's what happens. You get inside your head, and you start thinking too technically, and you just forget the fact that, you know, you want to play with passion and you want to play with feeling.
Yeah, and that's why I ask, because I know you've done other production and all that, but then all of a sudden, you know, here you are doing it, and you've, again, like you said, there's all of a sudden there's no feedback loop, because you used to be the feedback loop for everybody else. And yeah, I mean, it is just a really bizarre feeling, you know, to do that kind of stuff. I know that coming from doing it and, you know, being able to be in the studio doing, you know, recordings in the 80s and 90s, you always had a producer. And all of a sudden, now I have a home studio. And the first thing that I was doing with that, it took me forever to do, because I kept second guessing, like, everything that I did.
You know, right.
I didn't have anyone to go, that's good or that's crappy. And so, yeah, it just took me forever.
And in the digital age, you have the option. You have the option to just redo it 50 times. You're not burning tape at, you know, $150 a reel for 15 minutes. You're not burning tape. You're not, this doesn't matter. You're not wearing out the tape, you know, and doing takes. You can do it forever. You can splice it. You can edit. I mean, you can get as crazy as you want with digital. So,
yeah.
But I'd always had the answers. As a producer, I've done it a long time, and I always had a vision and would try to realize what the artist wanted, and I would have a clear vision going in with the material. And so, really caught me by surprise that I just didn't have the vision sometimes. Like, wait a minute, what the hell's going on? Is this going to be good? Is that part right?
Yeah, so, yeah. I think overall it shows that you really approached it right, though, because, you know, someone who didn't, I think you would see, you know, massive drums up in the mix all the time on a solo album by a drummer. But instead, what you get is basically 10 songs that are songs, and they're mixed as songs, you know, and it isn't just like featuring just you. It's featuring everybody. And it's all very even, and it's a song. And I think that shows that at the end of the day, even without having somebody in there to give you the feedback, it came out the right way.
Thanks for saying that. That makes me really happy to hear you say that, because I kind of had some criteria going in on the project, and One was that I had written 100% of the songs, and that I owned them, because there were a couple songs I wanted to redo that, and we had a publishing deal with MCA, and I wanted to redo a couple of those songs, but, you know, MCA had part of the publishing. I didn't want to deal with that, so I just said I have to own them, have written them 100%. And, you know, so I kind of had a basic criteria. All artists were dealt with the same way. You know, nobody was treated differently than another. So, but I did approach it in that I wanted it to showcase my songwriting. That was what it was about. I figured anybody buying my album probably knows I can play drums. So I figured, you know, it didn't need to be. And I actually, you know, somebody said to me, wow, when you play live, you play way differently in terms of playing more. And, you know, you're really kind of playing pretty laid back on your album. I said, you know, I played for the songs, you know. I didn't try to play, like, here's an opportunity for me to play something that really showcases my drumming in some way. I played it pretty simple and pretty straight ahead, and I tried to serve the song. So I'm glad you noticed that. And it wasn't about having my drums featured in there. And, you know, at the end, though, I did put in little things. I thought when I would warm up each time I would do something, I would play these little feels, and I put some of those pieces in between the songs because I thought it kind of cool. I have a little feel here and a little groove, and, you know, like sometimes it would just be a riff or whatever it was I warmed up on, you know. I would just grab some of those little pieces and put them in there.
Yeah.
But rather than have a drum solo. But at the end of the day, I wound up putting a live drum solo as an uncredited track because the people I was playing it for were like, where's the drum solo? Your solo album, where's the drum solo? So very last minute before mastering, I went and found a live drum solo. I didn't even know where it's from. It probably wasn't the best example of anything. I just grabbed one and put it on as an uncredited solo just so they'd shut up.
Yeah, I love how you called it Rabid Thunder, too. That's just a great name for a drum solo, so. Yeah.
It's like pouring grapefruit on the toms.
So I'm sure that a lot of people must have asked you about the song The Code and that one coming together and how it was to record that. And one of the things that stands out to me on that track is just the sound of Ronnie's voice. It just... It's kind of in a little bit different temperament than he usually was singing in. So to me, it kind of makes that song like that much more special.
That was, you know, that was just, I want to say, like, for me, really the highlight of my career. That both David and Ronnie, like David, Ronnie was going to sing. I think this really came about that, you know, Ronnie and David obviously related. They're also really, you know, best friends. And so, Ronnie was going to sing a couple of songs on David's solo album. It turned into maybe singing a couple of songs on the Roz album. And David graciously suggested that The Code was a really good fit for Ronnie's voice. And so it was really, you know, a situation where he was very gracious and selfless act on his part to even offer it.
Yeah.
And of course, Ronnie was, I'd always heard the stories from David from Elf days, and I used to go see them, and I knew how great Ronnie was. I had seen the band, and I rehearsed in a band that rehearsed in the garage portion of the house, and Elf rehearsed in the house. So, I mean, I'd known those guys from early 70s, and I knew how great they were, and I knew how great Ronnie was. But David would tell me how Ronnie was a one-take guy, and I've worked with, you know, a lot of singers, and I've worked with some great singers. And so I'm like, yeah, okay, you know, I know talent. And so you hear that and you just think, well, that's the story, you know. But when Ronnie came in, it was so true. Even David said, he'll only sing it again if he wants to change something, but he'll be dead on. He'll know what he wants to sing. And that's what he did. And it was, I was in awe because I never, of all the singers I've worked with, and I've worked with great singers, never seen a singer at that level. And he literally came in, and when he sang his lines, they were dead on. And the only time he changed anything was when we were saying it something twice, was when he wanted to try something different. And when he tried something different, it was dead on. It wasn't like, oh, it's an idea and it didn't work. It was dead on. I mean, it was just, my jaw was on the floor. But the other thing was, he was such a humble, nice guy and so sweet about it. And he was so concerned anytime he wanted to make a change in my melody, or which he just took the song to a level. I mean, from my demo that I sang, it's like, it was like, you know, my demo with me singing on it sounded like, I don't even, like Elmer Fudd singing, you know. I mean, it was no comparison. And, but he was so concerned about maintaining, and is it okay if I make this change? And just so gracious and considerate of that. But at the end of the day, it was an amazing experience. And, you know, and I was thrilled to have, you know, someone as great as Ronnie singing a song, and somebody that I had actually gone to high school dances, and, you know, there were like concerts, and I would go see the band as a musician, you know, Elf. We played the same circuit. My band played that whole New York and Connecticut and the circuit with those guys, you know. So I just known them for a long time. So it was something that was kind of in my DNA in terms of Ronnie's voice. And so to have it on a song I'd written was just the pinnacle of my career.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, it is, you know, it's just kind of, his voice just has a different kind of sound, a little bit different temperament on it. It isn't... And it really, you know, and like you said, I mean, he's doing it to serve the song, and it really shows it too, that you know, compare that song to some of the other stuff, and you can tell that he just looked at that and went, okay, this is how I think I need to do it to serve Carl's song, and it's just a great performance. Yeah, I really like that song.
Yeah, yeah, he did a great job. And funny, when after he passed away, it was Sweden Rock magazine did an article on Ronnie, and the interviewer, when he was interviewing me, he asked me about Ronnie as a person at the end of the interview. And he, you know, he just wanted to know, what was he like? You know, what did he think? And I was just said that a great, he was very, very intelligent, very kind. And, you know, I'd seen him in a couple of shows as well as working with him. And just, you know, how much respect I had for the guy, how he just loved the fans. And how, and he said that he said, I was really hoping you'd have something bad to say about him. Because he said, and I was kind of shocked. He said, why would you say that? And he said, because as a journalist, you're always trying to find the balance. You know, you want to find the opposite. You want to find something that balances your article. And he said, the only one he could find, he said, nobody said anything bad about Ronnie, except, and everybody said everything incredibly nice about Ronnie. And the only one he could find to say anything bad about Ronnie was Vivian Campbell. And, which, you know, was really no surprise to anyone, I guess, who knows, you know, there was some sort of bad blood there. But
right.
In the music business, when you can't find someone to talk shit about you, that's a miracle, because it's such an egotistical, backstabbing, dirty business that, you know, people will talk shit about you for no reason at all, you know. So if you go through your career and to have nobody have anything bad to say about you, in fact, say the exact opposite, you're a great guy. Pretty yeah. Big, you know, testament to the guy.
Oh, yeah, and that's kind of the experience we've had, too. Like, last year we did a special, like, multi-part episode throughout the year on Dio's Strange Highways album, which when it came out, everybody was all, like, up in arms, and, you know, it was very polarizing opinions about that album. But now, here we are years later, and people are, you know, looking at that totally differently. And we talked to, you know, everybody that was in the band at that time. We talked to the people that went on the European tour with them. We talked to the people that went on the U.S. tour, you know, engineers, like all these people involved in it, and every last one of them, to a person, had nothing bad to say about Ronnie. They all, right across the board, mm-hmm. you know, just that same thing that you experienced with him as well. And you know, it just says a lot about the guy.
Absolutely.
Look at the cover for your solo album and the whole logo you have together. And I just wonder, like, who put that together? Because it looks so cool. When you first look at it, it looks like some deadly, like, medieval weapon until you really look at it and go, oh, it's drumsticks and stuff. But it's just a pretty awesome logo.
It's pretty funny that instead of the Chinese star, it's the drum star weapon. Eric Felice, who did the Rod's Vengeance album and who did our single Great Big Fake Wings and... you know, he just did this new thing that we have out with Veronica. He's been a graphics guy, and he is, and I can't say enough about him, he's a friend, but he is so talented. I mean, he actually came up with the title for my CD. My album had been tentatively titled Madman, and he's the one who came up with the idea of Headbanger.
Yeah.
And which I thought was a great title. And, for, you know, apropos for a metal guy doing a drummer doing a solo album.
Absolutely. But, I mean, what do you do? You're banging on drum heads, so it's like every which way, it's a great title.
Exactly, and it was. But he is such a great graphic artist, and it's Redhead. Redhead or Dead is his website. If anybody's interested in checking out his work, but he's done tons of album covers, and he's a phenomenal graphics artist. And you know, they'll be doing our new CD cover, I'm sure.
Awesome. Yeah, it's just such a great job. Even I mean, just the detail of that. You know, some people would have gone and they just put the flames and been concentrating on just the flames. But the fact that he's even got smoke, like the wisp of smoke coming off the top, that I think that's what brings the whole thing together with for me is that just that bit of detail. It's so cool.
We laugh about this because when doing my Vic Firth sticks, they were going to put my name on the sticks for me. So I had the Roz logo and my signature on my Vic Firth sticks, which they do for... you know, artists they endorse. It's not actually sold as my model, but it's they do that for me. And so Eric Philippe did this for me. And I looked at it and I said, Eric, you know, maybe the C should be up just so... I get an email back from him, which we all still laugh about, which was, Carl, it has been measured. It is as it should be. Eric. We were all like, I guess that's how it is then. I guess that's it. So now whenever we have anything to say and it's final, we always say it's been measured. It is as it should be. And, you know, he really knows his stuff and he stands by his work. He's not wishy-washy in any way.
He's the Steve Jobs of graphic arts, basically.
He is fantastic.
So, you know, as far as new Rod stuff, so obviously you did the single with the V, and so then I imagine that's going to be part of a much larger program and be the follow-up to Vengeance?
Now starting, and we're actually really eager to get going here. I'm ready to do drum tracks. Plus, we have B.O. Day coming up. We have this show at Queensrÿche next Saturday, and then the following weekend, we are doing D.O. Day, which is the tribute, which is actually the for the D.O. Scholarship in Cortland, New York, the Memorial Scholarship. So we're doing that, which is a full-day festival in Cortland. But in between that, you know, once I have my foot tracks, which are just about ready to go, I'll be doing drum tracks for this new CD. So we're excited. We want to have this done and out by January.
Awesome.
So that's our goal, new Rod CD.
Awesome. So hopefully when that comes out, I'll be looking forward to having you come back on, and we can tell everybody about the new Rod CD, because definitely your album after album, you guys don't disappoint.
Kind of you to say that. I mean, you kind of stick with what the Rods do, you know?
Well, you know, it's definitely a tough business, and you know, to get bands like you guys, and I mean, obviously the radio is not going to go, "Ooh, new Rods," and play it, you know, because, you know, God forbid they actually dig deep and play different stuff. So, you know, I know we're more than happy to let everybody know, hey, there's great music out there.
I do think, though, that Taylor Swift had asked us to open for her on this later tour, that we're just not done with the material. But, you know, we'll see what happens when the album comes out. But I know we would have been a good fit for her opening for Taylor Swift. But no, you're absolutely right. You know, radio is never going to embrace what we do. I think with the fact that we just do, now we're able to release, self-release things, and we may have a label for this, but, you know, we're still weighing that out. But, and we may just do vinyl, you know, we're talking about just doing vinyl for this album. But either way, there's a freedom that comes with not having an A&R person and a record label telling you need to be this or be that, or you need to, you know, this needs to be more commercial, or you don't have this kind of song. It's just, we just do whatever we do now, and that's just being censored or truncated or, you know, guided. It just doesn't happen. It just is what it is now, and there's a lot of freedom in that. It's really good.
Yeah,
positive.
Definitely. I mean, you guys put out your first, you know, put out the Rods, but 81. So I mean, that was when I was like a junior in high school, and you guys have been doing this all these years. I think you've pretty much earned the spot to be able to do it the way you feel like doing it at this point. And like you said, you can do all of this stuff now for the most part in home studios as well, and control your own destiny. So, I mean, why not? Why put up with the other crap that you really don't need?
That's right. I mean, at this point with us, we're really enjoying playing live. We're enjoying recording. So it's just, it all, you know, comes together nicely now. And it just hasn't always been that way. You know, a lot of times getting ready to do an album is stressful enough on its own without having other pressures, outside pressures. And the fact that with home studios, I can do my drums here, you know, I can do whatever I need to do here, and I'm not worried about the clock because I'm not paying $80 an hour, you know, and an engineer to sit there and record me.
That's right. Yep. And it's go there and try to get in the rhythm of it. And I mean, that's what I like too, is when you have a home studio, it's like inspiration strikes. You just walk in and you do stuff, and you're just very comfortable.
Right.
And yeah, it's just great. So as far as, you know, you talk about playing live and stuff, and obviously all that stuff must be up. You must keep the website, therods.com, updated with all that stuff.
We do. Absolutely. And any new product we have, and you know, any upcoming events we have, and any specific things, like, you know, Craig Gruber just passed away, and you know, we had a little note about Craig. You know, he was one of our first bass players, and Craig and I had been friends before he joined the Rods, and you know, it was sad. It was a big loss for us, particularly me, in that Craig and I had been friends for a lot of years, and I love playing with the guy, but I also love hanging out with the guy.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I talked to Carmine a little bit ago, and talking with him, you know, he was talking about people that, you know, getting older and losing people in your lives. And he did actually mention Craig when we were talking, so I'll just pass that along to you.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I studied with Carmine in my early 20s. I studied. He was very, very helpful in changing my drumming and helping me with technique and things I use to this day.
Yeah, definitely a good guy. And I mean, I think a lot of people got a lot out of Carmine. And, you know, I even told Carmine, you know, I wish that people had more appreciation when they talk about John Bonham, to take one step back and see how much influence that Carmine had on John Bonham, especially after those early tours they did together.
No, absolutely. I mean, Carmine, he's such an innovator.
So besides, you know, the main website, therods.com, what about any Facebook or Twitter or any, you know, as far as even for you on Facebook or Twitter?
You know, I am on Twitter. The Rods actually have the Rods Official on Twitter is our name on Twitter. And also, there's a Kennedy Facebook page. And there's also the Lodge, the official Lodge fan page, which is actually a band one fan page. And then we each have our individual. So there's definitely a Carl Kennedy fan page, or regular page, fan page. So
okay.
Anything on Facebook, you can find us.
Awesome.
As a matter of fact, we're just about to announce we have a new video for song My Life, My Way, which for the Kennedy CD, which is just about to be released.
Oh, awesome. Well, geez, I mean, what took you so long? You've been since 2014. You're just getting around to it? Oh, my God, Carl, what's going on?
Well, it was, some things in between there, but it was late 2014. I probably should have just waited an extra month and put it out in 2015.
There you go. So, I mean, with this, you know, I know it's kind of early to tell, but do you think you've got like the solo album out of your system, or do you kind of see that you might have another one in you, with, you know, you're just waiting for the right time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there'll be another 35-year wait for my next album. I don't know. David and I have talked about it, because David was going to do another solo album. And at this point, we're kind of focused on the Rod. So right now, you know, my focus is making the best Rod album we can. And then if there's solo albums, I mean, you know, we'll see. But right now, I think the Rods really we're on track and we're having fun. So I think our focus is that for the moment, and channeling our material to the Rods.
Awesome. That's good, because I know that, you know, one thing about the Rods and, you know, the music that you guys have is you always had an element of a sense of humor in there and some fun and some energy. And if that's how you're feeling personally, then I think that bodes well for the, you know, the new album.
Yeah, I agree. I think it comes across and everybody's on the same page and having fun.
Yeah. Awesome. So there you go, guys. Obviously, you know, you want to go and pick yourself up a copy of Headbanger. It's great stuff. Every track on there is awesome. And like Carl said, all the small little interstitial stuff that's in there as well, it's all cool stuff. I like the Crush one. That's probably my favorite little interstitial spot that you have on the album. It's good stuff. And
I'm actually thinking of working, like I wanted some ideas to work that into a song, because I thought, which is cool. I should develop this one.
Yeah, it's good. I think I had somebody else recently that was talking about that and wanting to put that kind of stuff between songs. I think it's a really great idea. And I think how do they put it? They called it a sonic palate cleanser to have those things in there. So it's
that's great. A sonic palate cleanser. I like that.
Yeah. Those things I always appreciate when I see those. And again, it's the same thing. It's like a little riff or something that popped in but it just wasn't enough to develop into something, but it just needed to be presented out. So yeah, it's good stuff. Awesome.
Keeps it moving along.
Can't wait to hear the next Rods album. Love all the ones you guys have done before. So, you know, obviously, now that I know you got the same guy working the cover, there should be some killer cover art to look at as well. And if you guys do it in vinyl, I'll see it in a 12x12 format, which is even better. So I think good stuff coming our way.
Absolutely. The album gives you so many options for, you know, I kind of miss that, because I grew up with CDs when I started playing, or with albums.
Right. Yeah, me too.
I always loved the artwork, and I loved pulling out the sleeve, and, you know, I was just reading everything. I mean, I always read everything on the covers top to bottom. Now when I get CDs, I look at them and whatever. And a lot of times CDs don't even have that much info anymore.
They don't. Or if they do have it, a lot of times it's printed so damn small and they haven't really like done the contrast and colors. You can't, it's impossible to read what the hell they say. But you're right. I mean, same thing with me. I would read everything. Like my all-time favorite jacket stuff to read was the first Joe Perry Project album, where he even listed every piece of studio gear he used. I thought, this is like the ultimate album liner notes right here, where he's laying out everything. It's great stuff.
Like a little mini book on the album.
Yeah.
You know, when Joe Perry's album came out, we did some dates with them. And we did, the first show was at the Chance. The original Chance, I guess, if we're right. And he came in and he had a row of MXR digital delays for his guitar, and he had his mic stand was aluminum, and it was a curved shape, and it was a solid one-piece mic stand. Like, it was been measured out to the exact height where his mouth needed to be, the microphone for him to sing, and it was, you know, like, what is that? Like, airplane aluminum, you know, airplane grade aluminum. Nice guy to crack this up. But it was cool. And a bank of MXRs, which at the time were like $1,200 each or something. And we were like, wow, that is the coolest. He's got 20 of those things, like, you know, in a bank. Like, how's he switching between each to the airline, you know? But he was great. He played, loved it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely a big guitar influence of mine, that's for sure. So, yeah, I definitely appreciate you taking the time tonight to talk to us, Carl. I'm glad we were able to make this happen. And definitely, I'm absolutely looking forward to talking to you again when the new Rods album comes out. And we can really let everybody know what's going on with that.
Well, Scott, thanks for the support. We really appreciate it. It's kind of you to take the time as well. So,
awesome.
Thank you.
Got to support my fellow East Coast brothers. You know how it is?
That's right. That's right. The East Coast people stick together.
That's it. All right, Carl. Good talking to you. And like I said, have a great rest of the night and hopefully talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Take
All
care.
Right. Bye.
Bye.
Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Carl Kennedy. And of course, I couldn't leave it go without playing that Ronnie James Dio track. So from the Headbanger album from Carl Kennedy, this one is called The Code, featuring, of course, the one and only Ronnie James Dio on vocals.
Never sent from above. Did the truth become a lie, or did the lie become the truth? Was it created to control? Does something sacred lie hidden from our view? Parchment's treasure and the code. Are they fools to search for the answer?
Definitely a great track there, and I enjoyed Carl talking about working with Ronnie and stuff. Always great to hear the Ronnie stories, and I'm sure that Carl has got plenty more of those. So that is a wrap for this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. Got a great show coming up for you next week. The plan as it stands right now is to have the irrepressible, always amazing Veronica Freeman on the show. Of course, as Carl alluded to, Veronica's got a brand new solo album out under the moniker of The V. The name of the album is called Now or Never. I've heard it. It's fantastic, and I was able to have a chat with Veronica a few days ago, and I will be hopefully bringing that to you next week. Have a lot of editing to do on that one, of course, because Veronica and I get talking, and there's a lot of off-the-record stuff that gets said that I have to cut out of the interview. But it will be well worth it, and you will hopefully enjoy the hell out of that interview, as well as a little bit of some samples off of the brand new one from The V called Now or Never. So stay tuned for that next week. In the meantime, you can keep up with us at focusonmetal.net, focusonmetal.blogspot.com, on Facebook, on Twitter, or even got a YouTube channel, all kinds of crap. But of course, head over to therods.com. Find out what's going on with the Rods and maybe pick yourself up some great Rods merchandise. So that's it. So for Richie and myself and everybody else here at Focus on Metal, as I always say, have yourselves a great metal week. And until we talk to you again next time, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything.
else is insignificant.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.